You're listening to Revenue Vitals with Chris Walker.
Right. So, Chris, what would be great is if we could have a discussion about 3 to 4 of the top kind of values that you believe are essential for an effective marketing leader in today's world. So I'll start with the first one. What do you think is the first sort of value that a marketing leader should have?
I got to say, I think the number one value that a marketing leader should have is being customer focused and being customer centric. The idea of the chief marketing officer, or some people all call it the chief market officer now, is you got to know the market and you got to know your customers better than anybody else. You have to know how to segment. You have to know what they think. You have to know who the buyers are, how that differs by each persona, how each person is measured internally inside of their company, what their goals are, what their key challenges are, how they prioritize your product. You just have to know all these things as a marketing leader. So while there's other values that people could deem, quote unquote, more important, I think by definition, understanding the market is the number one value and priority for a marketing leader.
Cool. And so I guess when it comes to this whole kind of idea around customer centricity and stuff like that, are there any kind of life experiences or like life events that come to your mind when you think about customer centricity? Like what's happened in your career that's made you think, I've got to be customer centric?
Yeah, well, in 2013, I worked at a company and they brought in a consultant named Andy Midland. It changed my career. And Andy was talking about how most people think about marketing as the shouting, the promotion, that type of stuff. But actually underneath that, there's all this thing called strategy. And typically the marketing department should and the marketing leader should really be figuring out the overall go-to-market strategy. How are we going to position? How are we going to price? What is going to be the promotion strategy? What is our channel and direct sales strategy? What's the overall go-to-market? And you see great CMOs lead the charge here, be the number two to the CEO when it comes to go-to-market overall.
So for organizations that don't have a marketing lead as like their number two, what would you say to that marketing lead to make themselves that number two?
Gosh, be a business leader. You know what I mean? I think there's a huge difference here. And I can see it in the, you know, difference between a VP of marketing and a CMO, or even between CMOs when you work with people. There are CMOs that are business professionals that happen to execute marketing, and then there are marketers. Mm-hmm. And I think that really is the difference to being the number two, is that you have to think and act like a CEO, even though your core responsibility is inside of quote unquote marketing.
Gotcha. Okay, cool. So that's the first value that we're talking about here. What's your second?
I think the second one is being able to effectively balance the short term and the long term to drive optimal outcomes for the business in both the short term and the long term. I think that lots of marketing leaders, whether by choice of their own or whether forced to by the executive team or the board, only operate in short-term mode. It's also a symptom of the growth at all costs venture capital game. And a lot of the short-term focus is not actually driving results. It's just driving metrics that make you feel like the marketing department is doing something. But then you'll see it in the lagging metrics like revenue and sales velocity, sales productivity, things like that. You'll see that down the road and realize that the short-term metrics don't actually align to actual business outcomes. And so being able to effectively understand what are the things that I can do to drive revenue this quarter? What are those things? It's probably not lead gen. It's probably not spinning up content syndication. It's probably not giving away gift cards to have people sit on demos, which is a lot of things that people do for the short term. It probably is getting aligned with your sales team so that when people ask to buy, that you have a great experience. It probably is optimizing your website so that people will convert on a demo and ask for it when they're qualified and they want to buy. It probably would be when someone searches the category of your product that you're showing up number one organic and you're showing up number one in paid, and you're being able to capture demand for people that don't know about your company but are looking for the category. Those are things that are going to drive short-term results. And then thinking, and then once you sort of have that stuff figured out, you got to figure out how are we going to build the long-term engine that becomes the competitive advantage for this entire company forever? How are we going to build the community that has 80% of all of our total addressable market inside of the community? How are we going to build a podcast that all of our top 300 strategic accounts that are worth millions of dollars a year listen to? How are we going to do those things and build a competitive advantage against other companies? And I think that people really miss on the long-term upside and competitive advantage that gets created through marketing, just like it gets created through product, just like it got created through having massive distribution in the 90s. Sales distribution or channel, that was a huge competitive advantage back then. It's not, you know, having that many feet on the street is not that much of a competitive advantage anymore, given sort of the shift to digital and independent buying. Yeah, I think people balancing the short term and the long term has to be, you know, a top priority for marketing leaders as well.
Yeah, no, totally agree. Totally agree. So have there been any kind of life events or experiences that, again, you know, similar questions to before, that made you think, no, this has to be a key priority for marketing leaders?
Yeah, actually, before we get into that, I wanted to go back because there was a story I had about customer centricity that I want to cover real quick.
Yeah, please.
So Andy Midland did that project and taught me a lot of stuff. And then in 2016, I entered a new venture-funded company, and I just called Vapotherm, and I operated against all the principles that Andy taught me. Let's go out and do qualitative research with customers. Let's make sure we do surveys and get quantitative data. Let's identify who our customers are. Let's work through a process to really understand it and align the strategy. So I did that for the first 90 days within this company. I got hired as a senior marketing manager in like a well-developed, they just raised a Series D. This is not a small company. And I go out and I spend this time talking to customers, riding with the sales team, doing surveys, and all the data that I collect shows that the exact opposite of what our go-to-market strategy is, that our go-to-market strategy is completely misaligned with exactly what our customers want, where they discover, when they want to buy, and how they want to buy. And it just became really clear, like, it's weird. You know, you have companies that are raising $100 million Series D rounds and aren't able to identify these things when it comes to go-to-market strategy. When able to recognize that and then be able to shift the strategy, you can drive major, major business impact. So now getting back to balancing the short term and the long term. Yeah, I mean, like, it's interesting. So I like built that engine at Vapotherm. And at that point, the company, like, I actually was looking long term at that company. They did set a great foundation for what we wanted to do. We took a 2-year period of time and transitioned from getting $0 in revenue through the website to 33% of net new business coming through the website that has better sales velocity, lower customer acquisition cost, like just overall a better way to get customers, to have customers come to your website and say, hey, I want to buy now, versus you cold calling them and saying, hey, can we drive 3 hours to do a demo with your company? And so I was able to think long term at that company and drive really strong results. Then I enter a Series A company after that company IPO'd and I moved on. In the first week I'm there, they say, well, we have 6 SDRs and we have 20 people in our company and 12 of them are salespeople. So more than 50% of the company is sales headcount. We have no demand. We're stuck cold calling. We can't close deals. Like, we just hired you, a growth marketer, to come over here and get us a bunch of MQL so our SDRs have people to call. I'm like, I don't think this is going to work, but I'll get you as many MQLs as you want. So we spent a bunch of money. We collected 516 MQLs over 2 weeks and closed 0 deals. And that was the light bulb to me, because thinking short term drives you to do the wrong things that don't align with your customers.
Cool, man. I mean, just listening to you talk about like some of these stories, I'm kind of getting the sense that actually there's an underlying value here that, you know, an effective marketing leader needs to be brave, needs to be daring to challenge the status quo in order to kind of prove their point and educate the company on what is actually best practice and what's actually going to drive revenue for the company. Would that be fair to say?
Yeah, I was going to get in. If you asked me what the third one was, I was going to say embracing failure, understanding that quote unquote failure is part of the process, that not everything you could do is going to work, and being okay with it. And understanding that there are things that you need to do that need to drive results, and there are things that you need to treat as experiments that you don't know how are going to work, just like I treated LinkedIn as an experiment in 2019. And it's become the engine for me to build a pretty fast-growing big company. I think we're number 4 fast-growing overall company on the back of LinkedIn, because I saw an opportunity and I capitalized on it. And while other people were saying, build an outbound sales team, you're never going to be able to sell stuff on LinkedIn. Literally, people said that to me in 2019. And so part of it is being able to embrace failure. Part of it is having conviction to understand that the way that you see the world might be very different than how other people see the world. And knowing that you see the world differently because you're closer to customers and therefore you understand it better.
So this topic of like embracing failure, is there a key moment in your career where, again, this is something that you thought, okay, I've got to be okay with this. This is great for my growth. This is important for the business to learn what works, what doesn't. Anything that comes to mind there?
I mean, like it happens all the time. Like people will look back at me as a CEO and say that, you know, a bunch of these decisions that I made were wrong, right? And they measure it against in a short period of time and they make a subjective call about right or wrong. What you really don't understand is you never know what the alternative would be. If you did if you did nothing, would it have been worse? If you did something different, would it have been worse or better? You never really know. So it's really hard to judge one single decision on a short timeline and say that was a good or a bad decision. But when it comes to marketing, like there's failure all the time, down to the micro level. Like we launched a campaign and we took a bet and we ran an out of home campaign. Like I'm making stuff up now. This isn't like real story, but like just an example. Like we made a bet. We ran an out of home campaign across like 12 airports, the major city airports like SFO and stuff like that, and weren't able to see any results. We took a bet. It quote unquote failed. We learned a bunch of stuff. And now we can go and use that to figure out what the next thing is. Or at the micro, I messed up on my speech one day and I was stuttering and I didn't include a point that I wanted to make. Like you could be considering that even a micro failure. And like, so there's quote unquote failure all the time. It's really about how you look at it. It's like, is it, did you actually fail or did you actually learn something, which is part of the process to being successful? And I just don't believe that, especially in B2B companies, especially in the marketing department, we do not give flexibility for people to be creative, try things, potentially quote unquote fail, which leads them to learn a bunch of stuff, which then leads in 6 months to you having the unlock in your business that creates massive growth. And because we don't ever give that flexibility, we never get the opportunities to see that massive growth. And it's really disappointing because marketing is supposed to be a creative, flexible function. It is turned into some scientific data, quote unquote, data driven, systematic, boring bullshit machine. And it's really sad.
Yeah, no, I totally get where you're coming from. Experience that. Cool. Okay. Those are the three that you've got. Do you have one more? Do you have any more that you think are essential?
I mean, you can kind of break that one into two. There's sort of like embrace failure. And then the second part of that was like, you know, be bold, act with conviction.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. So again, going back to like your own career, what was the turning point where you thought, no, I'm going to stand up for myself and actually lead with conviction with what I believe? I think it might be the example you gave around like proving that actually the current go-to-market strategy was completely wrong and the evidence was proving it. But is that the example that comes to mind?
I mean, I feel like I've always seen the chessboard, the playing field a little bit different than the leadership at companies from the beginning of my career. From the beginning, at the first company I worked at, we sell hardware products that are small and easy to ship through distribution, and we pay a distributor 40 or 50 points to take an order. And we do that in every different state. And I'm like, why would we do this? Why don't we start building a direct-to-consumer e-commerce engine? We keep the 40 or 50 points, and we work in building our own direct-to-consumer motion and cut these distributors that add almost no value and take a bunch of the margin, and we cut them out. Because over time, we're going to be vulnerable to the distribution. And over time, they're going to start private labeling products out of China or through another manufacturer, and they're going to cut us out. And I know this because the same shit happens in retail, and it's happening 5 or 10 years before it happens in B2B. And the same channel conflict is going to happen for hardware products that sell B2B. And so I'm like, this is a huge competitive threat, and it's a huge opportunity. Why wouldn't we go direct to consumer? And like, nobody at the company had ever thought about this before.
Yeah, what do you think it is that makes you think like that, though, that sees the scenario or the situation differently to other business owners? Is there, do you think there's something like from your background or the way that you've kind of grown up in your career that makes you see it differently? Or is that just Yeah, I don't know how to.
Yeah, I can't explain why, but I believe I have like a very intuitive feel about where the world is going and where what people are doing and going to do. And so, and I think it might be given, you know, sort of like the time, my age and the time in which I grew up, which is basically like, I'm like the first generation that had AOL. Like when I was like 6 or 7 years old, AOL came out. So I've like been on the internet for basically, I've been like the first people that have been on the internet for basically their whole life. And that translated into, you know, Google search, Amazon search, Facebook, Instagram, all, you know, LinkedIn, all the platforms after that. And believe that I was just in tune with where the world was going, which might be different for other people. You know, they've been in the industry for 30 years. When they started in their career, the best way to do it was feet on the street and to sell through distribution and to do these things. And over time, sometimes you get out of touch. Yeah. So I think that's part of it. But the big turning point for me here was, and where I like had be bold conviction, was at the point where I, you know, the company was operating in one direction and all the customers at our top accounts were telling me something different. And it's really easy to have conviction when you have the exact data from customers that are saying, hey, I want to do these things and you're not doing them for me. So that was where I had a lot of conviction, to the point where, you know, I'm saying, like, people thought I was crazy when I told people that the executive team, that we're going to run Facebook and LinkedIn ads to sell medical devices in 2016, 2017. People laughed at me. And then six, eight, 10 months later, we were getting $10 to $15 in pipeline for every dollar we spent on Facebook ads. And we were spending $50,000 to $75,000 a month there and getting tons of good qualified sales opportunities at target accounts for our sales team. When before, they were sitting there sending emails hoping that they could get a meeting. And people don't understand that $50,000-$75,000 investment per month in marketing, which translates to what? Let's do 50. So it translates to $600,000 a year in Facebook and LinkedIn ads. And the effectiveness of that to drive 30% of revenue while you have $20 million tied up in a field sales organization that is generating their 60%, that you, by adding the $50,000 a month, you dramatically blend down your cost of acquisition because you get more customers and the incremental expense is very low relative to sales. And so people don't look at it that they're like, why is our cost per MQL on marketing so low? And they really need to look at it of like, we spend a fuckload of money on our sales team right now and we're not getting the productivity that we need out of them. And the solution is not to buy more sales technology or send more spam emails or to get a sales trainer like Sandler or Challenger. The solution is to figure out how to do marketing so that our sales team is talking to people that want to buy. And if we're able to do that at a decent cost and we look at this as an overall go-to-market engine, we would dramatically blend down our total customer acquisition costs.
So I like the point that you bring up there, because it kind of segues into my next question, which is, you know, we've got these kind of like four areas that you've spoken about. And if I'm not mistaken, we've taken it from like a marketing leadership kind of perspective. But now that obviously you're a business owner, you know, you're the CEO of Refine Labs, what would you expect to see from someone that's working in your company? What kind of values do you want to see from a marketing leader? I mean, it might be the same, right?
They're exactly the same. Like it's weird to think, like, if you look at marketing in the right way, marketing equals business strategy. Marketing is synonymous to business. Product, positioning, pricing, go-to-market strategy. It's business strategy when done correctly. So I see as a CEO, I think one of the most, like, the most positions that should become CEOs is CMOs. If operated correctly, you don't see that happen as often. I think that over time, we'll see that happen more. But if done a marketing leadership done appropriately leads you to be a CEO.
That's a cool concept.
Yeah.
Yeah. You don't see that much. Do you?
You haven't in the past because finance, product, and sales have been the, what people quote unquote prioritize in the old world. And in the future, it's going to be product and marketing.
Well, I can't wait to see where that goes, man. So with these kind of values that you've mentioned, how much of those do you display on a day-to-day basis, and how does it manifest in your day-to-day?
Yeah, let's talk through it. I mean, like, customer-centric, I evangelize what we're doing. I get hundreds of comments on LinkedIn posts. I had a call with one of our best customers 30 minutes before I got on this call. I'll have another one with another customer. I'll Slack with CMOs who are our customer. I'll do podcasts and interview CMOs that aren't customer of ours to just gut check what's going on in the market. I talk to thought leaders. I'm in it, right? So being customer-centric is easy if you're committed to it. And so the strategy that I brought on with LinkedIn and podcasts and events and interviewing people and that type of stuff creates access to customers, thought leaders, other people in the market, the ecosystem, that creates a lot of opportunities. It creates word of mouth. It creates partnership opportunities. It helps you understand customers better. It drives more revenue. So there's a lot of benefits to doing that. So that one's really clear. When it comes to like balancing the short term and the long term, I think one of the strongest things I'm able to distill is what are the things that we can do in the short term to drive revenue, and what are the things that we would try to do to drive revenue in the short term that's going to be a waste of time. And I think being able to discern those two things is one of the most critically important things as a leader to do that. I think another thing is setting the right business goals so that it gives the team the opportunity to do the right things over time. I've been a part of it, and I watch a lot of companies set goals that make no sense, that set projects up to fail, that set their team up to fail. And it really is doing nobody any good, including the business or your customers. Be bold and embrace failure. Yep. I operate with conviction all the time. Ever since it was LinkedIn and podcasts, and people told me that it was dumb not to do that, it just felt intuitively right to me. Spent a lot of time on TikTok. I spent a lot of time focusing on our messaging. I think there's a lot of different angles about sort of like quote unquote be bold. And I think a lot of people misinterpret what be bold means. It's not about doing like making sure that like you have AI in your marketing right now because AI is hot, or you figured out how to use ChatGPT-3 to do something. That might be how to be bold, but there's a lot of other ways to be bold: changing your pricing strategy, operating on a new quote unquote new channel, changing your messaging, building certain strategic partnerships. So there's a lot of ways to be bold, and a lot of the ways to be bold happen underneath the surface. It's really interesting that you think, like, when you think be bold, you think visible, you think out there. But a lot of like bold decisions actually happen in a strategy meeting that happen underneath that people on the outside don't actually necessarily see. And then lastly, like, embrace failure. I embrace failure all the time. We're in a challenging economic time period, tough to weather, especially for a company that, for my company that was highly concentrated in the tech SaaS sector, especially in Series B, C, and D companies that need to extend runway for 5 years so they don't have a down round and can't raise another round right now. All those rounds have gone away. So we've had to get really creative around what types of customers that we go after, how are we going to price and package, what type of service are we going to deliver to meet the market where it is. And, you know, people that are selling into the marketing department, other CEOs and companies listening to this, I know every company is struggling because marketing budgets are taking a huge haircut right now. So just the available amount of money to all the different marketing technology and service vendors and service providers has gone down 40 to 60%. And so could we have done anything to avoid some level of a downturn? I don't think so. I think it was inevitable that there was some level of downward projections happening over the last 12 months. And so I don't like being able to embrace that, hey, we're in a tough situation, we're going to get through it, that we need to make serious changes. We're now in wartime, not peacetime. People need to step up. There's just a lot of, there's a lot of things. And on a micro level, whether you miss a statement on a podcast, I had something I wanted to say, I didn't say it there. I missed my LinkedIn post one day. There's a lot of like sort of micro failures. I just don't get caught up in them. I don't even consider them failure.
Cool, man. So this next question would have made sense if I showed you the values to look through, but I'm going to try and spin it in a different way. Okay. Do you think there are any values that are from the old world of marketing that people are still currently doing today?
I mean, sure. I don't know if I'd consider them values, but like, you know, my number one value is customer centric. I see a lot of marketing teams operate that are sales team centric.
Mm-hmm.
And when you know, cool to think about that you're being one team, but the real way your sales team looks at it is that your marketing team serves the sales team in those types of organizations. And like, we have to be focused on the customer. So I think that's an old sort of mindset. Back in the day, what did marketing do? I was a marketer in 2012. What'd you do? You served the sales team. You made them sales enablement materials. You built a booth at the event so they could stand in the booth hungover. You made the brochures that they were going to hand out at their meeting that they never used. You made the website, but you barely ran any campaigns except for events and maybe some like direct mail if you were innovative, or some banner ads. Like that in 2012, that's what marketing was. And I think it's just an old world mindset that's what we still do today, given how much has changed and the availability, the access that a marketing team can go out and directly access customers and move them forward in a buying process independent of what the sales team is doing. It's great if you want to coordinate activities with the sales team and check out intent data and drive outbound based on that. Sure, like use the technology and do those things, but at the core, we need to have marketing focused on creating demand and capturing demand with the target customer. So that's one. The people really know my position on this one, but just the way that we think about measuring marketing, where like literally in the early 2000s or mid 2000s, that a couple of technology vendors decide and analyst firms decided that the demand waterfall was the right thing to do, and that it was MQL, SQL, and that marketing's only job was to deliver MQLs, and then sales had to sift through all the garbage to figure out how to hit their number and close deals. And we literally still measure the funnel like that for a lot of companies today, you know, 15, 20 years later. I think it's totally crazy, which also evolved into this digital like touch point based attribution craze that we still use today, that takes only like the limitations of certain software tools and deems that the primary way that we decide on whether marketing is working or not and where we should invest budget dollars. Just again, makes absolutely no sense to me given how much the world has changed. I think that those probably are the two big ones, whether you think about marketing primarily focused on serving customers being the market or the sales team, and then thinking about how you actually measure both on KPIs and attribution in marketing, I think are probably the two most outdated things that hold people back.
Cool, man. And so I guess this is kind of like the last question, but when you've built your teams in the past, you know, in most kind of like interview scenarios, you look to skills, you look to competencies, etc. How much of a person's values and beliefs have been important to you during the hiring process?
Values obviously matter. And we've been able to create like really strong value synergy at my company through the interview process. But the most interesting thing in my situation is how we attract talent. And the point of view of the company, what we stand for, how we promote and market both to our customer base and prospective employees, all attracts a certain type of person who's tired with the status quo, that wants to try new things, that wants to be bold, that wants to be a future CMO. And we are able to attract those people, which then allows us to filter it out pretty simply and easily. The tough challenge with a lot of companies is they don't have that attraction method to get people that are aligned in the same things. So then they're out there making compromises based on the pool of people that they are able to get organically. So I think I never thought about that or said that before. But I think the thing on culture fit, culture ad, however you want to look at it, is how we attract people to join here.
Yeah, I think there's an element of like purpose as well, because, you know, when I look at Refine Labs, you know, I can see your purpose. It's stuff that you said, that you're challenging the status quo. You're almost kind of like making a stand for marketing, doing it in the right way. And I think that's what attracts loads of people to you, to stuff you say and stuff. So I don't know if maybe purpose is something in there that I've never said out loud either. So now I'm kind of thinking, oh, okay, maybe I've blown on a thread here that I need to unravel a little bit more.
Yeah, I mean, if you're a prospective employee looking for a new opportunity, I think that you should be looking at four things. You should be looking at mission, market, leadership, and product.
Mm-hmm.
So I think those are the four spectrums. So mission and purpose kind of go into the same thing. Are you bought into that market? Is the market attractive enough? Is it a place that you want to be? Is it the type of customers that you want to be working with? Leadership, have the people done it before? Do they have experience? Do they have sources of funding? Do you believe in their ability to execute? Do you see yourself trying to be like them in the future? And then product, like, doesn't matter if you're in a huge market if your product sucks. So like product has to matter too.
Cool, man. Cool. Those are all the questions I had, but I don't know if there's anything else that you wanted to add or say. Totally up to you.
I mean, I'll riff for a minute on this like mission, market, leadership, product,
yeah,
which basically comes down to like I feel like there are like, and I've been in both situations as a prospective employee, you're in a position of strength or you're in a position of weakness, right? You're either like, I don't think I can get another job. I'm going to take whatever offer I take, I'm going to get, versus a position of strength and abundance of like, tons of companies would want me to be in this role. There's plenty of companies out there that want it. I'm going to be very selective. I'm going to pick the one that works best for me. And there's obviously a lot of gray area in between those two things. And when you look at these four dimensions, mission, market, leadership, and product, what you're really trying to get to is this place a place that I want to bet my career on? There's so many people out there that are right now that are in marketing that are jumping jobs every 6 to 15 months. So they can go and they can be making 75K and then 9 months later they jump and they start making 85K and then they go somewhere and they jump. They start making 100K. The problem is that, yeah, you increased your salary by 25%, but you haven't learned anything. You haven't done anything. You haven't been at a company long enough to actually make an impact. And then eventually you keep playing that leapfrog game and all of a sudden you're a senior director at a big company and you don't know how to do shit. You can't build a Salesforce report. You don't know how to run ads. You have never created content. You've really just jumped around jobs to get salary increases, and eventually that time is going to run out. What you need, what I recommend thinking about, and I've done this too, right? Nobody's perfect. I went through the same learning. I'm just talking through my experience, what I learned and what I would have done differently. And what you're trying to get to is this place a place that I'm willing to bet my career on, that I will be here for the next 3 to 7 years, that I'm going to do legendary stuff, that the company is going to be successful, and that I can leave after that. And I have a huge network of people that I've been successful with. I have tons of data about the impact that I drove. I've seen how a well-functioning, successful organization operates both at leadership and at the tactical level. And I'm a way more valuable prospective employee, potential executive, potential founder or co-founder after that experience. And so I feel like people should really be looking for that opportunity. Vapotherm was that opportunity for me. I was there for like a little bit over 2 years from a Series D to an IPO. And I learned so much there. And I wanted to leave after a year and I stuck it out. And all of the impact and all of the major learnings that propelled me in the future of my career was in the second year that I almost left. And so if I could say something to people, it's like, you need to be somewhere long enough to actually learn. Another thing I'll say is that the grass is greener on the other side. When I left Vapotherm, I went to another company, got a huge salary increase. I almost doubled my salary leaving that company, and it was a total shit show. And I was gone after 9 months, and it led me to start my company. No regrets. It led me to exactly where I was supposed to be. But like, the grass is always greener, especially right now. Things are hard. Even the companies that have just raised had $100 million of funding round in 2022 have the hottest AI product. I'm still taking calls from people saying that they hate being at the company and they don't want that job. I talk to marketers at the, you know, marketing manager, senior manager, director type of people. I know what it's like right now in the environment. And so Like, if you're running from one place to go to another one, you're most likely going to run into the same exact issues over there right now. It's a small pool of companies that are having a lot of success right now. And companies are, you know, out there, even big, well-known, well-funded companies facing issues with culture, facing issues with retention and attrition, laying off people. And so as you think about making your next career move, there's a lot of factors that go into it, I guess, is the point that I'm trying to make. And, you know, do you plan on staying there for a long time? Do you believe in the mission and the leadership and those things? Do you see you being able to, quote unquote, make your mark, be able to tell a story about how you fundamentally change the growth trajectory of a company? Those are some of the angles that I would be looking at when you plan your next career move.
Nice, man. I mean, just when you were talking, I was like, yeah, I feel like I'm in the right place. Good to know, man. Good to know. Cool. Yeah, Chris, that's all the questions I had.
That's super valuable.
I hope you found it like interesting to, you know, talk about some of these things.
Yeah, dude, I've never talked through stuff like that. I appreciate you reaching out and talking through with me. For those of you that don't know, this will probably go on our podcast later. So Eddie's working on a master's project, and Eddie asked me to come on and talk through some stuff, and I was happy to help. So, yeah. Cool, now people know what you're up to.
Yeah, I mean, I'll let you know how the results of the project go. Got a few more interviews, so so this is good one. You made me think on the fly. Cool. No, that was awesome, man.